I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's Unrivaled welcomes you to the Players Club, sponsored by UCCU. Monday nights at 7, BYU quarterback Jerry and the BYU football team join Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey in the Unrivaled Players Club on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It's another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. It is the Players Club. Alex Carey, Scott Mitchell, up here in Salt Lake City, live in Provo. Jaron Hall, BYU quarterback, joining us on the program. Jaron, how are you this week, man? Thanks for being with us.
I'm good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Getting through it, trying to get through this weird weather we're about to experience. So, We've got the Monday Night Football game on the screen in front of us. The Jazz are across the street, their first preseason game of the year. So we're like in the thick of our favorite time of the year with all these sports going on.
Sounds like it, man.
It's really exciting. You guys are 100% dialed in, of course, to your season. BYU suffers their first loss this weekend against Boise State. And I was massively impressed after the game. Ben Bywater, after the game during the media scrum, said it was a massively positive vibe in the locker room. Will you explain that after the game? Obviously, the loss, everybody else seems disappointed. But you guys, I want to hear about that positive atmosphere in the locker room.
I mean, I think what he means, you know, when he says it, there's definitely, you know, some disappointment, you know, just upset at ourselves for letting that one get away. But at the same time, the positivity he's referring to is how quickly we're able to, you know, talk amongst ourselves that, you know, we got another game to move on to. You know, we already knew what we did before even watching the film. You just had a feel for what we did wrong in that game. And we knew it was stuff that we could correct. So there's nothing to freak out about. There's no reason to go pointing people out and pointing blame. So it really was. I mean, after Coach Kalani spoke to us, it was just his focus on Baylor, you know, this coming week. And just being positive to know that we're a good group of dudes who, you know, are good at the game of football, and, you know, we'll be all right.
A lot of times you learn more from losing a game, and you've had time to kind of gain a perspective on it. What did you learn from this last week, this week, that you can take into next week and the rest of the season?
Yeah, we just got to respond better and handle adversity a little better. I mean, it's the first game we ever went down at any point, right? It's one bit of adversity we got to handle better is responding, you know, after another team scores. And then just, you know, executing throughout the course of the game. We started out, you know, really hot the first two drives. Would have been nice to have two touchdowns. But nonetheless, start out with quick 10 points. And then from then on, just kind of shoot ourselves in the foot time and time again. And so those are a couple of the things, you know, after watching film today that we kind of focused on and talked about.
So how do you respond better in those situations? Because I really agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, like, it almost feels like sometimes you get in this situation and you go, okay, we're down for the first time this year. We haven't been in this situation. Or we just had a fumble And there's a tendency to almost try to do too much or to press
like
things.
A frantic exactly. feeling. Or
yeah.
Something.
So what? Yeah, exactly. What actually? How do you respond better? I guess.
You know, it's interesting. So I didn't feel like there was any pressing going on, and you know, as far as emotions, you know, we were talking amongst ourselves through on the sideline. We knew what we had to do, but we just made very uncharacteristic mistakes. And so, I mean, from the outside in, maybe it looked like we were pressing, but it's just funny because you know, amongst ourselves, we felt like we knew what we were doing. We were dialed in. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you get down to the red zone, you can't, for instance, you can't go, you know, four and out on the 3-yard line and not score, give the ball back to the team, you know. So just little things like that that we just haven't struggled with all year. And not to take away from Boise, man, they're a great team. They're a lot better in their record. They struggled a couple games, and we knew they were going to give us our best shot, and they did, especially defensively. They were very well dialed up on their defense, had some great plays, and they made plays that we didn't, so. Props to them.
It seems like everybody else sort of melts down and goes, well, I guess you get a loss and then that's the end of the year. And there's,
yeah, right?
There's that part of it where people kind of freak out and they go.
Yeah.
But I think that was the part where I was when I was listening in the postgame where I was like, look, our goals are still intact.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody else who might have goals for us, that's a lot different than the ones that are on the wall in you guys' locker room. So how did you guys focus on those things, I guess, when it came around?
Yeah, man, Kalani brought us back to reality, man. It's very hard to have an undefeated season. You know, for a lot of fans, they're going to feel like, oh, that's it, and there goes everything. But we're 5-1 still, and that's something to be proud of. In college football, I mean, it is so hard to win any game any week. Any team can come out and surprise anybody. You saw it, you know, with the number one team going down to Texas A&M this week. It happens, and that's part of college football, you know. So to be where we're at right now and to have the record we do, that's something to be proud of. It's something to hang our hats on and just continue to get better from. And so Kalani, you know, he did a great job addressing us today. But just also reminding us to get back to doing the little things correctly. You know, it's easy when you're winning a lot of games to think you kind of made it and we can just show up. But now we got to get back to fall camp grind mindset. Do the little things off the field correctly, do the little things on the field in the weight room and our training room and film room. So it was a good team meeting we had today. It was really humbling but at the same time just knowing, you know, be grateful for what we've done and be happy for the accomplishments we've had and, you know, get ready for this next week.
I don't know. My experience was always sounds weird, it was always easier to bounce back after a loss than it really is. It's something about, like you just mentioned, humbled and it really kind of does that to you. So you've been out a couple of weeks, Jaron, and you got back. What did you feel like in the game? Did you feel like you're a little rusty? Did you feel good? How did you feel in the game?
I think going into the game, I felt like maybe I'd be a little rusty, but shoot, from the get-go, we were clicking really well. So it was a quick transition back. It was just good to be back playing. So I felt like, you know, I did okay. Still got to improve, you know, not to blame being out 2 weeks. That's no excuse. I've got to be better. And I know everybody, you know, will continue to get better, do their 111th. But I for sure got things to fix. But it was just good to be back. I'm grateful to be healthy again and, you know, be playing with my buddies.
You did not have the designed rushes that we had seen in some of these previous games. I'm sure that's by design. But there was also, you know, this part too where – the run game seemed to have been flipped a little bit too. I know that, you know, Tyler has had such a great year so far, continues to. And, you know, it was interesting because at the beginning of the game, it looked like easy sledding on the run side of things, like the gaps are opening up. And then they just tended to close down a lot more. Was that because of the playing from behind mentality that ended up kind of being part of it too? Like, well, hey, we got to throw the ball to get into this thing more.
Yeah, it's funny, though. I mean, when it started to rain, if you notice, we kind of got a little bit away from the pass game and almost relied a little too much on the run. We talked about that as a team. We felt comfortable that we could run the ball more. The ball was slick, you know, just put it as it is. So we decided to put, you know, a lot of trust in our run game. And their defense, they had a great scheme dialed up. They, you know, had an extra guy in the box, a great safety to stop the run. Who was a stud player, and they did really well the rest of the game. And then, you know, later we got back to the pass and started rolling it again, and that's when we just couldn't finish in the red zone. So we did the things we needed to do, but it just comes down to, you know, when you're in the red zone, you got to score points. You know, even with the mistakes we made, we still were in that game, and that's what hurts the most is we still could have won. Had multiple chances.
You got a lot of targets. I'm looking at all these guys. Gunner with 4 catches and 102 yards. Puka with 4 catches and 75. Neil Powell with 4 and 50. I mean, it seemed like some of those throws were coming easy too. And so, I think a lot of people saw that result and went, "What happened?" And it's a turnover game. So, it's just one of those games. We're gonna come back. Let's move on to that Baylor game that's coming up this week. I want to know where your head's at on facing your old offensive coordinator. And the advantage or disadvantage that it is for, you know, facing an old coach and what's going to be a Big 12 opponent in the future. So we're going to come back. More to go right here on KSL's Unrivaled. Jaron Hall in Provo, Scott Mitchell and myself up here in Salt Lake City. We've got a Jazz preseason game. We have a Monday Night Football game, plus some possible NFL breaking news on John Gruden, the possibility that he may resign. We're watching those reports. And we're going to check on those things, see if that's even part of it. So stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled.
The Unrivaled Players Club with Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey, and BYU's Jaron Hall.
All righty, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled Players Club with Jaron Hall, brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank. We have breaking news, folks.
Yeah, reports coming out of now the NFL Network and ABC now confirming as well that John Gruden is out as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach. John Gruden, who faced the last week of racially insensitive emails that had surfaced from 2011 and 2012. It appears that even more emails had also surfaced. As of today, John Gruden informed Mark Davis, according to the NFL Network, that of his decision to resign, and he is no longer the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. So that's our breaking news right as we get into it here, as we watch this NFL, this Monday Night Football game going on as well. In the meantime, we have that falls down from up there. And, yeah, so John Gruden, those emails now surfacing as of this week, and then they were 10, 11 years ago, and they've come back to bite him. So racially insensitive emails that he said were too much of a distraction to the team. He informed the team. He informed Mark Davis, and he's no longer the head coach. John Gruden out as the head coach at the Las Vegas Raiders. We're going to jump right back in here, though, with Jaron Hall. And, Jaron, you had to jump into the breaking news there as we saw it how kind of unfold on Twitter, and then it was confirmed there. So there's your breaking news. We're doing our Players Club. It's wild. It's wild to think what happens in 2021 and how quickly things can change, too. Uh-huh. Let's jump into this game you guys are preparing against with Baylor. Offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes, Ryan Mateos, the offensive line coach from last year with you guys, they're at Baylor now, and they're having quite a good year and with same record as you guys. Big 12 opponent coming up. What have you guys talked about when it comes to preparing for Coach Grimes and what they – obviously, you're not on the defensive side of things, right, but there obviously are going to be things that they're going to be looking for that you and your offensive coordinator, Aaron Roderick, are going to be doing. How do you guys prepare for that, knowing these guys know what we do here, man? These guys know, yeah, and we know what they do a little bit.
All right. Now you just got to tighten up everything, the operation of stuff. Things are different, obviously, this year from last year. With every coach who becomes a coordinator, things change a little bit. It's a little different, you know, from when Grimes was our OC. But, yeah, a lot of similarities still. So as far as what the defense is doing, I'm not sure. You know, it's day one of prep. But at least for us as an offense, it's more talking about their personnel today, the dudes they have up front and throughout their linebacking core secondary. But they're going to be a great defense. As far as what I know, they got a lot of returning guys. And, you know, just like Arizona State, Utah, they're going to be one of the best defenses we face. So we just talked about being prepared to play, understanding that it'll be a tough game, and we've got our work cut out for us. So we've got to execute well. We've got to have a good week of practice, and every day we've got to dial into the small details and just get better from last week.
So clearly one of the biggest challenges last week was were fumbles, right? Turning the ball over. And as you're preparing for this opponent this week, like, what's the right focus on that issue? Is it just kind of an anomaly? It's like, hey, it just kind of goes away, or is it something you kind of have to address and deal with in your preparation and during practice?
Well, I think it's hard to go away from it because, you know, such a big part of our offense is taking care of the ball. So every week we'll highlight those stats of turnovers or no turnovers, and this week obviously a lot more than we've had in any other game. But the reality of it is you're not going to point any fingers or blame anybody. You know, Tyler and Lopini, those guys have carried the ball almost 500 times, yeah, I think it is, here at BYU, and they'd only fumble the ball each, I think, once or twice until that moment. And so, that's crazy, unheard of, to go that many years and that many carries and only have that many turnovers. And so for them to both have in the same game, it's just unlucky, man. You would have never guessed. And right. So, I mean, those guys are going to continue to get the ball, and they're going to continue to make plays. But it's just, it's just an anomaly. It's crazy that it happened, and it just stinks for those guys, man, because you know that they work so hard and they're ready. But it's not them. You know, I had a turnover as well. threw a ball up there, silly. And so, you know, a lot of us have our own weight to bear when it comes to looking inward and realizing the mistakes we made. So, but yeah, you definitely address it and just realize, you know, this next week you talk more about just ball security, and I think we'll be okay.
What is it that you guys are going to look at then as you go into this week and you say, hey, all right, I mean, last week you had this thing about who's the starting quarterback going to be? When did you know, by the way, last week? Was it closer to the game than maybe would have been for comfort for you? Or was it like, you know, you knew? I mean, Aaron Roderick talked about how you kind of built up in reps during the week. When did you find out last week you were going to be – or when did you feel like you could go and say, yeah, I want to get the start?
Yeah, it was I think it was Wednesday or Thursday when I was finally able to do full reps, healthy, and get through a full practice. Just to really do everything I needed to do was Wednesday or Thursday maybe. So, but for me, I mean, I kept my mindset that I'd be able to play. So, you know, I'd be sharp and focused and at the right mental level I needed to be as far as preparing for Boise State. But, yeah, it was later on the week until it was official that I'd start getting the starting reps up until the game.
It's probably nice, too, to go, look, all right, now we're past that whole, is Jaron going to go, is he not going to go kind of, you know, vibe.
Yeah.
And so now that, like – to get kind of back to quote-unquote normal, that must feel pretty good.
Yeah, it is. And this week more normal than last. So, you know, just be comfortable enough to get out there and play the game I need to play to win a game. So, that's yeah, it's a good feeling.
So, you're big on routines and kind of staying in the same routine with a lot of things. And you haven't dealt with a loss yet this year. How much of that changes for you? Do you do more? Is there... You know, I've heard of some guys, they carry a tennis ball around, and it's like we're going to bounce it around, you know, to kind of bounce back, whatever.
Right.
Are there things that you do like that, or things that maybe you change in your routine or modify just to say, hey, you're going to go the extra mile to make sure I'm ready this week?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you'll look at the tape, and you'll see things you need to work on, and you know, for me, it's seeing what I can do better, and then maybe spending more time in practice working on one or two things, or in film session, you know, if there was something I wasn't as on top of last week, maybe it's a red zone or a certain play in the playbook or a group of plays. Now this week I'm going to study those more, and I'm going to look more at red zone defense. I haven't decided yet what that is, but I'm sure that there's for sure going to be something I do this week, whether it's just more time spent or, you know, I don't know yet, but there for sure will be something different for me. You know, you can't ever... Einstein says the definition of insanity is to do the same thing and expect a different result. So I'm going to have to for sure change something up and, you know, just find something that works.
You were talking about how, you know, you're looking at Baylor's personnel, what it is that they do. What jumps out at you initially as you started to look at that film from what they do? And like I said, I mean, this is the two of you guys, your two teams are 10-2 mm-hmm. on the season total. So these are two very talented football teams coming across each other down in Waco. What are you seeing on the video so far of the Baylor Bears defense?
Yeah, so far they check off all the boxes, man. Just complete. They have a great front, some absolute studs up in the middle. Their linebackers are super athletic, fast, long, and experienced. And their DBs, all of them, I think, are seniors. And one's like a 6-year returner. So they've played a lot of football along that defense.
That's like a BYU guy or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. So they're going to know the game, man. They know they look very comfortable in what they do, and they don't do a ton of stuff, but what they do really well. So we're going to have to, you know, be dialed in. But for them, they'll have a test with us too. You know, it'll be two great football teams, and so it'll be a fun game.
Not a long travel season so far for you guys.
Right.
This is kind of a further, you know, further distance to
it's
travel.
A legit travel game.
Like how much of a discussion do you have about that? What do you do that kind of helps you to adjust to actually being away from home and the distance that you have to travel?
Yeah, I think just limiting distractions. You know, we went to Vegas. Every distraction in the world did a great job of focusing in on what we need to do while we were there. So same thing here. You know, you're going to be flying, and you might have some jet lag if you don't do well with flying and you have some time to recover. But I think at the end of the day, if you stay focused, and I think our team does a great job with the mature guys we have, to stay focused on the task. It's a business trip. And so, you know, while we're traveling, you find time to continue to prepare for the game, to study. And then, obviously, you get ready for the atmosphere because it's going to be a little different than a home game. But, you know, we welcome that adversity and the fun that comes with that.
Do you guys go watch a movie like the night before? Do you guys do all that kind of stuff?
We don't anymore. We did in the past. COVID year, obviously, we couldn't do that anymore, so we didn't. And then this year we just kind of felt, as the coaches felt and the captains of the team, the groups of leaders we have, when we discussed, we just felt like we were a little more focused. You know, you know, eating so much junk food the night before when you're at the theater, and you know, just more time to prepare.
The junk food at night.
You know what I mean?
Everybody, yeah. I love the idea of not just bed checks, but like the candy check. Be like, all right, yeah. Empty your pockets.
Pockets like, out. You know, they come knock on your door. They come through the fridge. You know, make sure.
So you can't. So they're like, yeah, we're not watching.
Come through the fridge.
We're not doing. No, we're not doing joking. Stuff. We're not doing stuff as teammates. Everybody, sit in your room.
No, they gave us bags of goodies, man. They take care of us still. For sure. You know. So you just got to be smart about what you're putting in your body and what you can handle, and just got to know yourself. Whatever gets you to, you know, play well. So.
Well, Seinfeld's back on Netflix, so if you need to, you know, unwind a little bit, you can get back.
Well, it's not The Office, but it's close, I guess.
It's close. It's our version of The Office from when I was a kid. All right,
I guess that's true. Oh, my bad.
All right, so we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week. Good luck down in Waco, man, and have fun. And we're looking forward to it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
All right, let's take a break. News, traffic, and weather right now, of course. The big news, John Gruden out as a head coach at the Las Vegas Raiders. We'll get into a little bit more of that story. Plus, you'll hear from Kalani Sitake, his weekly press conference from this week, what he had to say about getting ready for taking on a couple of his former assistants. Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled.
Blue one.
Monday nights at 7, BYU quarterback Jaren Hall joins KSL for an insider look at the BYU football team. Join Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey in the Unrivaled Players Club on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Carey, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us. If you missed any of our conversation with Jaren Hall, you'll be able to hear, go back and download the podcast anywhere podcasts are found. We got a couple things, a couple of irons in the fire here. The Utah Jazz, home preseason game. Yes, they are at home for the first time in the preseason and up 28-22 at the start of the second quarter here. Weird thing here, Scott, too, to see, you know, these guys on the floor together. And, you know, and then you throw in like a Hassan Whiteside. Rudy Gobert's got like a lot of hair right now. You were like, who's that 27 guy?
You.
Who is this guy? And so it's this whole thing about everybody having to figure out you've got guys in the lineup that haven't been in the lineup totally in the preseason here. And so now you've got like a starting five that looks a little bit more like a starting five that you've seen before. Mike Conley, Joe Ingles, Rudy Gobert, Royce O'Neal, I want to say, oh, that's Jordan Clarkson on the floor right here. Donovan Mitchell was in just a couple minutes ago, and a three-pointer drained by Mike Conley right there, and they're up 33-22. You can hear all that over on 97.5, 1280, The Zone Sports Network, of course. And we have been talking about this firing of John Gruden that just happened about 25 minutes ago. It finally came down. We had seen some rumors of the possibility of him maybe resigning, but apparently he let Mark Davis know, told the team, and John Gruden is out. Emails that he had sent as an analyst from ESPN during his time there with ESPN, those emails have resurfaced, misogynistic, homophobic, racially insensitive, all of those terms being used about the emails that he had sent out, and he has now walked away from coaching the Las Vegas Raiders. And, I mean, you initially just go, holy cow, this is a team that was looking better than they've looked, right? This is like the John Gruden
that everybody was waiting for. I think what's hard about Gruden, though, is that he's such a personality, right? He's a unique personality. You know, we watched him on Hard Knocks a couple of years ago. He's got this kind of way about him, and I don't think – you know, you would see him on the surface and go, this is a racist guy. This is an insensitive guy. You know, he's a guy with a bit of a mouth on him that he likes to talk. He likes to say these things. And
certainly
you
he's
know,
been
you
opinionated.
Kinda, you
yes.
kinda, right. You kind of live by that. And I guess you die by that in the world today. But it's just, you know, it's such an unfortunate thing because I really like what he's doing. I like the figure of him in the NFL. You know, it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing that this has come to this, you know, and you don't like to see it. But, you know, apparently and I don't know what was said. I don't know the emails, but apparently they were pretty damaging and probably something he can't hide from. So it's just unfortunate. It really is.
Yeah.
Very
and,
unfortunate.
You know, I think ESPN or somebody on the NFL Network had pointed out, too, the exact thing that got John Gruden fired was something that the NFL investigation didn't do anything about with Dan Snyder with the Washington football team. And obviously owners, coaches, those situations are going to be treated differently, right? I mean, owners, you know, they are the league. They're the league.
I mean, and the owners so own they
the
own
commissioner the pays gets his pay from those owners. So I think that, you know, but it's not lost on everybody that kind of hypocrisy, right? I think you'll see that. And so John Gruden's out. And again, the Las Vegas Raiders have another set of turmoil they're going to have to work through now as they don't have a head coach currently. So John Gruden's out in Las Vegas. In the meantime, we were just having our conversation with Jaren Hall. And I want to jump into, as we're still in the middle of the Players Club here, some of the things that were said at Kalani Sitake's press conference today. And also some things that Gunnar Romney had said. But let's jump into facing this next team. It's an interesting thing here, Scott. We were talking about it before the show. Like, I don't know who has the advantage here because you've got BYU who knows what Jeff Grimes does. You've got, you know, Jeff Grimes who knows what Aaron Roderick does. They have sat in the same room calling plays together for a long time. So here's what Kalani Sitake said about facing Baylor and Big 12 teams in the future. That's a pretty exciting thing, knowing that these guys are going to be part of their conference going forward. Here's what he had to say about that.
Look, the entire conference, their offense, their offenses have a lot of success, you know. But I think if you look at what Baylor's doing, they're playing a really good defense as well. So they make things really difficult for an offense to have success and to make big plays. And then offensively, they're really efficient. Quarterback takes care of the football, hasn't thrown an interception all year. And they have a good group of running backs and some great skill players at receiver. And then and I know their O-line is being coached well because Grimey and Mattel are there. So I know that they're going to do their part. And it's a tough team. It's a tough matchup. We're going on the road. And
he just mentioned everybody. Like seriously, he's like, he mentioned everybody. And they got good walk-ons. They got good get-back coaches.
But Jaren did the same thing, too. Their linebackers are long. Yeah, they're athletic. Yeah. They got
basically,
a couple guys who are playmakers.
We don't know
there.
Anything about this team.
I mean, that's really what it sounds like. They do, but they don't want to break it down totally.
No, I don't think they do. Look, here's the thing when you play your old coaches, okay? This happens more than it doesn't. It's a boring game. It's like you expect all this, you know, oh, we're going to get back and we're going to do all this, we're going to whatever. It's a boring – it ends up being very boring. It's one of those – it's just not an exciting thing. And so, you know, they talk about all of – it's just way overhyped. But you think Tom Brady, you think Belichick.
Here's what I wanted to play here was this, you know, how BYU's going to try to just get ready for another opponent. But it is – you know, you can't help but think about those coaches who used to coach with you.
Well, professionally, you want to look at it as the next game. I mean, honestly, that's what you want to do. You want to just move on and then just play the game and treat it as such. But hard to do when you love the individuals that are there, that you became really close friends and brothers with. For us, with Jeff Grimes, with Eric Mateos, we became really close. So I care about them. And I know our coaches and our players do. And so it's going to be different that way, but we want to win, you know. So I think – I know they do too. We're very competitive.
I don't know. Maybe we – when he says, yeah, it's hard when you have those guys you love and they're in the other room. It's like these guys both – you actually want to win more, don't you? Scott, don't you want to win more when you're playing these guys? Don't you think Nick Saban was 24-0 against his assistants till this weekend for a reason? He's not going to give those guys an inch.
It's like playing your bigger brother. That's really what it is.
Yes.
It's just like that. And the bigger brother is just not going to give you anything.
Yeah. And little brother, boy, does he
want to win.
He never wins.
Never wins.
All right, let's take the break here. Jazz up 43-29 here in the second quarter as we've already had an ejection on the New Orleans Pelicans side of things in a preseason game. Getting into it with the referees on the Pelicans side of the bench. We'll take the break here. You got to get warmed up for the season in all facets of the game, Scott. We'll come back. I've got some quotes about humility. I've got Gunnar Romney talking about this team getting ready for Baylor as well. So Gunnar Romney talking about Baylor, not Baylor Romney talking about Gunnar. Stay right here with us. More to go on KSL's Unrivaled.
Bye.
The Unrivaled Players Club with Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey, and BYU's Jaren Hall.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled Players Club, brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank. I love when we have these full nights, you know, where we got basketball going on, we got football going on.
Got an NFL coach getting fired. Yeah, I mean, news in the middle of
I just, oh man, just, I feel, I just really enjoy John Gruden. I just hate that, you know, this has to happen. I really do. I just, you know, and if you're just tuning in with us, Raiders coach John Gruden fired or resigned.
Yeah, technically resigned, yeah.
Due to emails from about 10, 11 years ago that were apparently racist and misogynistic.
Had some racial undertones and some of them misogynistic, homophobic. Terminology that he used about Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the league. So I think all that just kind of added up to the, you know, then you have to do the math if you're an organization and go, can we weather this? Can we figure it out?
It's hard when it's in print, you know, when it's right there. I mean, you know,
they've been floating around today, and then more came out. So, you know, this was a thing that, you know, I think there was some waiting in the wings going, I've got all these emails.
If you're the NFL.
Yeah.
Okay. You're the NFL, mm-hmm. and you go, John Gruden's somewhat iconic, right? Maybe a little overrated as a coach. Okay, let's just call that what it is. But he's a personality, right? And the NFL is about personality.
People are
right?
tuning into
just
the guy.
Really, really, yep.
And they tune into this Las Vegas team too,
right?
A lot because of him,
no question about it. You know, he's on Hard Knocks, which is an NFL type of thing. They want to have a guy like John Gruden on Hard Knocks, the whole thing. But here, you know, I'm sure the NFL is going, you know, we can't, we're kind of stuck because we've got this great personality, someone we really care a lot about, but, you know, someone probably found them, saw them, and just said, look, NFL, if you don't do something, we're going to. It had to happen. Or the NFL, someone like Roger Goodell just goes,
he saw the emails and was like, you know what? These were against me
personally.
I'm going
to get John Gruden.
I'm going to get you. And
regardless, it's just a sad situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jazz up 43-32. You can tune into that game on 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network as well. That's the first home preseason game. It's interesting because, Trent Forrest hit his head pretty hard on the floor. And that was nasty, and he went out. So we'll see what that looks like at the very least and concussion protocol looks like for Trent Forrest.
I think they need a four-point play in the NBA. I really do.
Shooting a three-point, you make it. And then
it just becomes like this kind of silly.
You're saying if you shoot it from the logo now.
Yeah.
Because now that's become the shot.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. We've got more to talk about with BYU football and the Players Club. No, you're getting ahead of yourself, and I won't stand for it. Gunnar Romney, who had a 100-yard receiving performance against Boise State, four receptions for 102 yards, along of 60 yards as well. This is what he had to say today about the team and everybody being responsible for the loss that they incurred against Boise State this Saturday. Take a listen.
Team game, everybody's responsible for their own, you know, for their own job. And, you know, we see it. If one of our boys makes a mistake, then it's our job to step up and, you know, help cover that mistake. So really it just falls on everybody. You know, it's, we win as a team, we lose as a team. So we're not pointing any fingers at anybody. So, you know, like we all can do a better job at our own individual positions to cover up for, you know, maybe some mistakes that we've had. But like Kalani said, you know, it's not on him. It's not on one person. It's not on one player. It's on the entire organization.
I think when you have a loss like this and it's kind of in the middle of the season, it's really something you can absorb. Like it was really good to hear the positive comments, you know, and coming out of what was happening. The season's not lost, you know, it's not the end of the world kind of thing. It's disappointing.
All the same stuff you're used to hearing after a loss like that.
Here's what's disappointing, because the schedule really for BYU is one, you know, that if things go right, BYU could go undefeated this year. I mean, it's, you know, and the reason is because you have that Power 5 heavy schedule at the beginning. You get through that 3-0 and people are like, you know, there's a real shot here to have a pretty special year, but BYU can still have a really special year this year. You've got Washington State, and they are whatever they are, but they beat Oregon State last week. I mean, so they're They're not a garbage team.
How much do you not know about this Pac-12? I mean, my goodness.
It's crazy.
It's wild.
And you have Virginia. You have Baylor. These are all Power 5 schools. And you have USC. USC is very beatable. Right? They're very, very beatable. And leading up to that USC game, you've got Idaho State and Georgia Southern. So it's really, you know, you're not going to get yourself super beat up going into that last.
Yeah,
and USC
yeah.
is in disarray, and it's going to be.
It's going to be even more of a mess, right?
It's going to be a dumpster fire by the time. By the time, you know, I wonder if there'll even be enough players.
The coaches
you know
like,
what my biggest
hey,
disappointment?
A lot of guys didn't come back.
We'll talk about my disappointment.
A lot of guys didn't come back from Thanksgiving. They were. They're looking forward to next year in the transfer portal, or at least this offseason in the transfer portal.
So BYU. Takes care of business the rest of this season, then you're looking at you know a one loss team and really and that's a really really special year and it's very doable. It's a realistic thing. This is not a you know pie in the sky type of conversation. So as disappointing as this loss is, it's good to see that they've still maintained their composure, their focus, and it'll be a fun, interesting test to see if they can get back on track on the road against a very good Baylor team.
You know what's going to be even more fun is over the next – well, what we've seen with Utah is when they've been in the Pac-12, it's been 10 years of wondering who their rival is, pretending like some teams are their rivals, like where they go, oh, Colorado, man, what an important game at the very end of the year. Two teams that are –
And they
both
put all
located.
The rival games at the end of the season.
Right.
You know, Arizona, Arizona State, USC,
seems,
UCLA.
Yes, it seems strange. And you just
Utah,
go,
Colorado.
Sure, Utah, Colorado. So Baylor was asked about Baylor being a future rival of BYU.
Who asked that question?
I don't know. I just put it on Mitch Harper. Go, did you ask that question about the future rival? I don't know. At some point, you go, why not? If it's two good teams, why not?
You know, I think this could probably be a future rivalry. I'm not sure about the history. I don't know. This might be the first time they ever played. I'm not sure. But, you know, a new Big 12 opponent, I think this could spark a future rivalry between two teams. So I'm excited to go and get a little bit of get a taste of what it's like there.
Scott, can you just
say
it? I mean,
if you're manufacturing, trying to...
Can you just put it out there in the universe and go...
I think that's going to be a rivalry.
This is going to be a rivalry, man. But if they're two good, if they're two teams who win a lot, then you've always said that that's kind of the formula for it. Why not? Especially if Utah refuses to play BYU all the time. Jeez, man.
Is Boise State a rivalry for BYU?
Absolutely.
See, I almost
why
feel...
Why do you not
believe
this?
I almost feel like that's a little bit like Colorado and Utah. Just because they're neighboring states, they now have to be rivals.
You want to get a little history lesson, Baylor or Gunnar Romney? You want a history lesson on the series on this series between Baylor and BYU?
I actually wouldn't mind myself.
Hey, BYU's on a win streak right now.
Yeah.
Okay. 1983, they lost against the Baylor Bears 40-36. 1984, fateful season for BYU, by the way.
Yep.
They won that game 47-13. That was the last time the two teams played, 1983, 1984. They split that series. BYU's currently on the one-game win streak. So they could extend that win streak.
Well, that year was a big year. I mean, it was a national championship year.
Yes. So you're talking, 37 years ago.
Now, if BYU had lost that game and lost out on a national championship, now you got a rivalry.
Now you got a rivalry.
But right now,
team.
No rivalry.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean – if they're going to be in the conference, just throw it in there. Is West Virginia going to be a rival? Is Kansas State going to be a rival?
I think it's a good question for BYU. Yeah, who's the rival?
They're going to have to kind of shake things out, and you're going to have to form over the next 10 years. Who's the biggest team in the Big 12 for you to beat after the whole thing gets figured out? TCU is a previous known. They're on the radar as a team you don't like.
TCU.
TCU's up there.
I say TCU.
But TCU's got to be good. They're not
and
that
Iowa
great.
State. That's who I pick.
Iowa State.
Yeah, just.
You just picked two teams that, like, honestly, my wife, if I quizzed her, she would have been like, I think TCU sounds like a real team. Iowa State, not real.
Yeah.
She would have told me Iowa State is not a real team.
Hey, Iowa's number two in the country.
Iowa is number two. Can you stink and believe that? Hey, we got a full second hour here ahead of you. We got a lot of things to discuss. Jeremiah Jensen's going to come on. We're going to break down a little bit of this John Gruden news, sort of digest that a little bit. On top of that, BYU and their first loss of the season. Utah and their first win at the Coliseum since 1916. We'll talk about all that next. Stay right here with us. News, traffic, and weather. Stay with us.
Hey, KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled, second hour of the program. Glad to be here with you. The Jazz right now across the street at Vivint Smart Home Arena, up 63-46 with 40 seconds left in the second quarter here. You can tune into that game on 97.5, 1280 The Zone, of the Zone Sports Network, our now sister station. Man, that's fun to say, isn't it, Scott? That's like pretty wild to I mean, and we're watching this Jazz team right now, and it's a preseason game for sure. That's my thought is this looks like a preseason game. But when you see these guys making three-pointers and to be up, you know, 17 before the half, to spin, to see that across the street here. So they're going into the half here with the 17-point lead maybe if they can hold the Pelicans to no points here in the last possession, and they do. So there you go. All right. Scott. Couple things happening. In about 15 minutes, you're going to hear from our guy across the street. I'm trying to think if Jeremiah Jensen's going to be here in studio or if he's going to be coming over from the game. I just remembered, like, he's going to be either over at the game. Either way, we're going to get Jeremiah on the horn here with us, and he's going to break down a little bit from over the weekend of all the things that happened. Number one, Alabama losing was a massive deal, I think, for all of college football. The shift that you have seen in college football has been amazing. BYU's loss against Boise State was absolutely devastating for a lot of fans because you lose to a team who already has lost three games this year, and you have all these turnovers. I said 2 weeks ago, or I said last week, that BYU's going to lose one of these next two games, and I would prefer it be the Boise State game, and I'm sorry for saying that. I apologize for saying that now, Scott. But I would
it's
rather
all your fault,
you tell me. Would you rather lose to Boise State or would you rather lose to to Baylor?
Kind of at this point,
yeah.
I'd rather talk about Utah winning at USC.
Okay,
but I
wanted to. I was just saying, all the BYU fans out there who just heard the Players Club. I was just saying,
yeah.
I don't fret.
I don't want to lose to anybody.
I know. But I think the odds of them going undefeated was pretty low. I'm one of those.
I didn't think that. Shifted. I mean, at the beginning of the year, yes.
Let's talk about another undefeated team in the Pac-12. The Utah
it's
Utes.
Two.
I know. It's wild to think that the Utah Utes are undefeated and they get a win at the Coliseum. Considering all the things that have happened over the past 2 weeks with the passing of Aaron Lowe, the team today was at Aaron Lowe's memorial down in Dallas. Coaches had their media push to tomorrow. And so it's going to be a wild couple of days here, and certainly with the win on Saturday, not just a win, we've seen this with USC, 40-plus points that they've given up in three home losses their last three times at the Coliseum, and the Utes made it look easy.
It's shocking.
What on earth happened in that game on Saturday?
It's shocking to see USC play like this because they really do. They have great athletes, but clearly it's in disarray there. And they're a team that's kind of, hey, if things are going great, fine, we'll be okay. But if as soon as it starts going downhill, I mean, they fall off a cliff on this. I think the thing that probably jumped out at me the most, and I've spoken the least about it, was that the whole situation with Ty Jordan, Aaron Lowe, has had a significant impact on this Utah football team in a positive way. I think it's really galvanized the team. I think they've gone closer to this. I think there's almost a reverence for going about their business. That was kind of the feeling on the sideline was, you know, there. I think it puts things into perspective about what's really important in life and what isn't. And I know one of the things Coach Whittingham did this week is what he didn't do. And what he did was he did not talk about Utah losing. I asked him after the game. I said, so how much, you know, you've probably heard this ad nauseum. You guys have never, ever won here. And I go, how much did you bring it up? And he says, I purposely did not talk about it one time this week. So just kind of putting the past in the past and moving forward was a big step for Utah. But Cam Rising.
Hey, that's finally the guy that you kept talking about.
Was amazing.
Yes.
I mean, he really, really played well in this game.
306 yards passing, three touchdowns, zero interceptions against a really, really good defensive front.
Named the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week this week.
Offensive Player of the Week for the Pac-12. Tavion Thomas rolls it. By the way, I have no clue who the running back is for Utah because it was three guys. It was TJ Pledger 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And then it was Micah Bernard like 2 weeks before that. And all those guys have had fumble issues and whatever, but Tavion Thomas probably had the worst fumbleitis of everybody. And then he has 16 carries for 113 yards and was absolutely the beast that you've described.
Tavion is an amazing talent, but couldn't take care of the football. I was watching him in the warmups, and he literally had the football glued to him. I'm telling you. And they've talked to him about it. They said, look, you've got to take care of the football. We want to get you on the field, but you know, if you can't show an
ability
to...
You will come straight off again.
Mekhi Bernard has been injured.
Yes.
TJ Pledger is a solid running back, but this Tavion Thomas is a guy that can... He's got some ability. He really does. He's got a lot of ability. The crazy thing for Utah, it's insane how many true freshmen are playing, or redshirt freshmen are actually playing on this defense and are just playing remarkable. I mean, remarkable how many young guys have really stepped up and you think they've kind of got to grow, and they really have kind of been playing. So Utah football is in a very good place right now in the present, but really in the future it's looking quite nicely as well.
That USC team, I mean, is just a massive question mark all the time, and I think that you nailed it too. It's like no one, including them, believed that they could win very many games this year. And they totally are a team who does not believe it. Their interim coaching staff feels every bit of that interim tag and feels every bit of that breathing down the neck of whoever the next coach is going to be, them not caring that much, it seems like.
Here's what's perplexing to me, okay? Utah had 2 weeks to prepare, and you know what they did? They ran the same front that BYU ran against them, so that 3-3 front.
Yeah.
Did the same thing. And USC was not ready for it. And you could see they were like, what do we do? What do we do? And they tried to run the football against it. So you had Devin Lloyd, who was a defensive end. And this will be a really fun discussion we're going to have with Devin Cafusi. So it really threw USC off. And they didn't know really how to handle it. And Utah did just such a good job of confusing, because late in the game, Utah went back to their normal four-man front. And all of a sudden, USC just went down the field. They were down by four.
Right.
You know, they got some garbage touchdowns late. And you're just sitting here going, why did this USC team not do this earlier? Because all they tried to run were bubble screens and run the football and throw short little passing routes. And Utah just essentially just kind of had their way with USC.
Look, Drake London is a talent. Obviously,
unbelievable talent. And we talked to him. I'm telling you, he's not understated now.
No.
I mean, he is a big deal. He's a big deal.
And he's a big dude, by the way.
He is a massive dude.
And he will translate
very well into the
NFL. And he knows it. Yeah. He's probably the number one NFL talent on that field. Yeah. And everybody looked at him and went, man, he's awesome. And the Utes absolutely blasted USC. I'm looking at it, and when it was 42-10 to start the fourth quarter, I went,
here's how big this game was.
It's quite a wild game to see the Utes turn this thing around.
After everyone left the game, the stadium's empty. We're doing the post-game show. Players came out in position groups and were taking photos on the field after the game.
Okay.
That's how big a deal it was.
Massive deal. And, man, you think about the Utes being now undefeated in Pac-12 play. Their two losses are against two ranked teams, by the way, who have a combined 10-1 record. That's not – the Utes are not this terrible team that everybody thought they were. Settle down. Stay right here with us. More to go. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Jeremiah Jensen joins us to talk John Gruden's firing, among other things, next right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery, and, of course, Jeremiah Jensen from KSL TV joins us in this segment. You know who's impressing me right now?
Who?
Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert looks different.
Looks like mid-season form.
Do you mean the hair of Rudy Gobert?
No, the hair threw me off originally.
Awesome.
But it was really, I mean, it's like, I saw him do a couple of moves where he had the ball in space, you know, because he's really comfortable around the rim. But he's,
if he's
really
put the ball down once.
And it was like, whoa, Gobert actually moved somewhat fluid and athletic.
There. Is that an Olympics thing? Like he got like a little bit of juice there, like of, oh, no, you really are not just a decent defender, like the best defender in the world. You're one of the better basketball players on the entire planet.
Yeah, absolutely. What he did in the summer with that team helps his confidence tremendously, and I think he gained some skill work from it. They obviously do things differently. Team France, they do things differently in FIBA basketball, but that's good. I think it's enhanced his game, and I think you're seeing that a little bit. There was also a point where he made this nice little pass down low to Royce O'Neal for a reverse layup, and that's another thing in his game that I'd like to see more of, is his passing ability.
Yes.
So I think that was also enhanced this summer as well.
Trent Forrest hit his head in the floor.
Did they
just say this guy's going into, I mean, went to the locker room, probably concussion protocol?
I'm sure
protocol.
He's in concussion protocol, but, you know, there's no official word. Watching some, have you ever hit your head on the floor in a basketball
that's
game?
That's the only thing.
It.
That's the only thing that I look at and go, okay, that's why basketball, you could get harder hits, so to speak, than you can in football, because of that exact
worst
thing.
Injuries I've ever had in my life are from basketball.
Elbows to the head.
Yeah. I broke a leg playing basketball. Yeah.
My heavens. So hopefully he'll be
I don't know how those guys make
point.
It through the season.
It's physical.
That it doesn't happen once a game, that somebody doesn't hit their head that hard once a game is pretty wild.
Yeah.
Okay, insane weekend. Let's start, though, with the news tonight of John Gruden's resignation as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. That mixes everything up in the NFL. The NFL responded to those reports that the New York Times initially rolled out with of the homophobic, racially insensitive, where to start, all of the bad things you can't do, misogynistic in all these emails from 10, 11 years ago when he was an ESPN analyst. At some point, I mean, do you think they ever looked and said, well, it's from 10, 12 years ago, he's a head coach now and he doesn't do those things now, or is it just it got to be too big and they couldn't get away from it?
Here's the thing. I read the report. I read what he said. I can't say it on the radio.
And more emails, I guess, keep coming out.
It's a lot. And it was a lot of it was sent to a friend who worked for the Washington organization. There were also, like, the CEO of Hooters was involved in this. Just nasty emails he sent him back and forth. A lot of it was that. But there was also a lot of this homophobic and misogynistic and even racist stuff that was being sent around here. And if somebody's criticizing, why is he getting punished and canceled because something he said in 2011? Who's in his locker room?
The very first openly gay player in the history of the NFL.
And 70% of his team is probably
African-American,
black.
Yes.
You can't go back in that locker room with any kind of respect once you learn that your head coach talks like that and acts like that.
You had a couple guys who said, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter that much. And then the other guys who said, I don't want to comment about it.
You pull the curtain back and you realize what's really going on, right? And it's, I mean, you have no choice but for him to resign. He can no longer be the head coach of an NFL organization and have any command over a locker room after it's found that he said anything like that, whether it was yesterday or 20 years ago. I'm sorry.
What'd they say they're going to do short term then?
They have an assistant that's going to take over the interim. I forget his name right now. It's probably somebody you've never heard of.
So
the Raiders are back looking for another coach next year.
Well, and it's insane to think, too, that this was like his best year that he had had, his best start that he had had since he'd been had been to Las Vegas.
Notice the difference in that team this week than in the previous three weeks?
Yeah. 4 weeks. So, to say it doesn't affect the locker room, at the very least, the distraction, but at the, you know, at the very worst, probably what it was for a lot of these players, which was hard to swallow, their coach had said all this stuff.
I just want to go back to it for just one second. Don't you think, though, the players, like, because you're around these players a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you travel to games. You have training camp.
You have one-on-ones with them.
The hours are long and grueling. You know your head coach. Like, I think of the head coaches I played for, and I spent a lot of time around him, and all the players do. And you develop a certain kind of relationship with that coach. Don't you think the players, though, kind of know who the coach is? And so they can kind of make that judgment for themselves, or because look, I'm just telling you, I know that NFL, I know what an NFL locker room's like, okay, and it's weird because in the locker room, it's very racially divided. It is.
You, the stuff that's said would get guys fired now.
You go,
right?
Well, you go to lunch and players sit by their race. Now there are things you say in the locker room to each other that would have everybody fired, no matter what your race is.
You think
no,
that's still going on in 2020?
I don't know. I haven't been in a locker room in recent years. I'm just asking the question. I don't know. I would just think you would probably say, look, I know this guy. I understand these things, but I don't want to say look past it, but maybe potentially I could get over it.
Even if the players can get over it, can the organization's perception among its fan base and in the community where it's at overcome that? Can the league itself overcome that and tolerate that? Absolutely not. So I think it's not just the players in the locker room, but just the organization in the community where it is and the NFL as a whole cannot have somebody who is
sure
carries himself like that and says those kind of things representing. Look, it's the head coach.
But what about Dan Snyder, who basically had similar emails?
So here
he's
come.
The owner of the Washington football team, and nothing happens to the guy.
Here's the hypocrisy. We haven't seen a peep, right? Those emails that he was probably involved in, things he's done,
massive investigation, by the way,
haven't been leaked to the media.
Right.
Notice that the NFL leaked this stuff to the media. Where do you think it came from? This is part of an NFL investigation. They got these emails while they were investigating the Washington football team. You don't think they have things from the Washington football team on that owner? Of course they do. Why are they not divulging that? Well, because he's an owner.
Yeah, it's very different.
Because
he pays the salary of Roger.
He's Roger Goodell's boss. John Gruden is not.
Yeah. All right. What surprised you more this weekend?
Like Gruden better than they like Goodell.
Yeah, that's true. But they don't. But he's not. He's the one making the decisions. I mean, he's the one making $50 million a year.
Goodell didn't say the things he did in emails sent to buddies. That's a
JJ,
bad situation.
What surprised you the most this weekend? That the Utah Utes absolutely blew out the USC Trojans, or that BYU lost to Boise State in the way they did?
BYU's loss. I expected Utah to go down there and win. I thought they would be highly motivated. I think they were galvanized. They had a bye week.
They really were.
And USC is not
that great.
Great. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Utah. Bulldozed
her. It was 42-10
at the
end of three,
great.
Man.
Utah probably would have beat Oregon this week, I'm telling you. Utah played great. Best I've seen them play since 2019. But USC is just not what they are, let's be honest. BYU lost that game because they coughed the ball up three times in the red zone on either side, right? They gave Boise State two touchdowns, and then they had a chance to go get a touchdown, and they coughed it up.
Yep. We talked to Jaron tonight, and he said, look, the team moved straight forward. They had a positive message. They were bummed about it, but they have a lot of goals. They still feel like they can achieve all of them. Get to New York Six. Is a New York Six bowl game still available for BYU if they went out from here?
New York?
It's going to be
New Year's, not a New
Year's. I trip up with that, too.
If you want to go to New York
for
your
New
York
bowl game, though.
It's going to be tough, guys. It's going to be really tough because unless Cincinnati moves up and gets that playoff spot, Cincinnati's going to get that slot.
Well,
and
everybody else keeps
losing.
There's
going to be a Big Ten team. There's going to be an SEC team.
There's got to be a two-loss SEC team in the college football
playoff. The Pac-12 champ is going to sneak in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's only so many slots.
If it's Oregon.
That's why BYU's margin of error was so thin.
Yeah.
It's because they had to run the table to get that spot. I really do believe that. And the difficulty of their schedule just doesn't allow that to be able to make up for that.
Okay, a week of preparation. ASU coming now to
Big
Salt Lake City
Saturday.
This weekend suddenly becomes the biggest game in the Pac-12 this
Only
year.
Two teams in
Those
the Pac-12 that
are
undefeated in conference
teams.
Play.
Crazy, right?
It's insane.
Jazz up 76-51. You can tune into that on 97.5 1280 The Zone in the Jazz Sports Network. And the Zone Sports Network, man, it's crazy. They're up 25 right now
on
the
good.
Pelicans. Looking
good. I know it's
really
preseason,
nice.
But.
Yeah, looking really good. JJ, what's on TV in that?
Well, we have Jazz highlights. Also, Haloti Ngata honored tonight in a big way. You don't want to miss that. It's awesome. And we've got baseball playoffs. and a golf team from Utah did something really special this weekend.
Holy cow. You're blessed with too many riches of sports highlights tonight.
I wish I had 5 minutes.
We'll take the break there. Thanks for hanging out, man.
You got it.
Appreciate it. News traveling weather now, NFL Roundup, and the 2-Minute Drill. Stay with us on KSL's Unrivaled.
Unrivaled. The Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and
the other guy. It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
All right, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. It's the NFL Roundup. And boy, we love doing the NFL Roundup after a long weekend of NFL games. I want to sort of go back to talking about college, though, for just a minute. In relation to the NFL, Scott, if you'll let me. This is why this year in college football is the best one I've seen in a long time. Because it mirrors a little bit of what the NFL is. You don't know who the best team is all the time, every week. Alabama losing, I can't tell you how excited I was to watch Nick Saban's grumpy face walk across that field to have to shake Jimbo Fisher's hand. And I know everybody makes this whole thing about it's his former assistant. It's not about the former assistant thing, I don't think, ever for Nick Saban. It's just 100% about I'm the most important person in this building.
Former assistants, that's the greatest compliment you could ever have. I mean, your influence touches for generations. You look at Bill Walsh and all the assistant coaches that came out of him. I mean, John Gruden, Mike Holmgren, Mariucci, you have Shanahan's. I mean, it just goes on and on. And then Andy Reid, because, you know, Andy Reid comes from, Marty Morning. I mean, just a ton of guys. And the same thing with Bill Parcells. So I don't care about all that stuff. Nick Saban is a great coach, whether we like it or not.
He's the Death Star. And he's guy that I look at and go, that's the one. If this script is going to get flipped at all with the college football playoff, any of that stuff, Alabama has to lose.
Well, there's no better feeling in all of college football, or any football for that matter, when someone who's just kind of hogged all the winning for years and years finally loses, because they don't know how to lose.
And it doesn't happen.
They really
that
don't
often.
Know how to lose.
It doesn't happen that often in the NFL.
No,
you have dynasties that happen, but still. They'll have dynasties, but they'll be 11-5 during the regular season. And so you go, well, at least they lose some games, and at least we see some parity. And in the case of, like, Alabama going, this is why, like, last night I'm watching Kansas City, and I'm watching Josh Allen, who is just picking apart these guys, and their defense is amazing, and they're showing.
Josh Allen might be the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Which is what they're talking about. They're showing the guy who was – not just like recently been the most important quarterback in the NFL, like 10 seconds ago was.
Yeah.
And then the team that was winning all the games that we were talking about. And I think Chris Collinsworth, or I think Al Michael said something like, so, I mean, they just must be absolutely wasted from these last two seasons of Super Bowl appearances. You know, where it's like
the Chiefs,
they win one, then because there's no other explanation except for what's happening to this team. I know the weather played a part in it. Who cares? In the end, all the times that they were able to like dominate these games, it's gone away. They're 2-3.
But
Scott,
even though the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, I think everyone thought going into the season Kansas City was the best team in the NFL.
Yes, still.
And what happens is you just get everybody's best shot, and it wears on you. It does. Teams that normally you just go, this is a win game for us, they're like, we're playing the Chiefs, and this is our chance at actually. Most people will tell you who have won Super Bowls, the hardest time was the next season. It's so hard to repeat. When you're on top of that mountain. And so you get these guys like Tom Brady. You know how they work being on top of the mountain? Like they're on the bottom of it. He's not eating salt on your chicken, or whatever. He pretends like he's still mad at the world. So you always have that hunger. It's so hard when you're the king of the hill, and to stay on the hill, and because there's nowhere else for you to go, and so it's easy to get lost. It's easy to get distracted. It's a tough thing to do.
I know BYU fans are upset because it's just hard to go outside of the top 10, drop 9 places in the rankings.
Is this the NFL Roundup, right?
Yeah, it is. But here's the point I was going to make is that's why the NFL is so great every weekend. When you go, look, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are 2-3. And you know what no one's thinking, too? Well, they're done for the year. I mean, their fans are saying that, but right now I'm going, they're still going to get the playoffs.
What's wrong with the Chiefs? What's going on?
But they're still going to be a handful. Yeah. They're still going to be Travis Kelce, their tight end. They're still going to have Tyreek Hill. They're still going to have Patrick Dang Mahomes.
There's another side of this. So you have teams like the Chargers, the LA Chargers. who are 4-1.
How about the Cardinals who are 5-0?
And you look at the Cardinals, but it's only five. It's 5-0, 4-1.
That's early.
And it doesn't get you in the playoffs yet. Or even the Cowboys. Even some of the, you know, some of the Cowboys, Amari Cooper's like, man, we're going to the Super Bowl. And that's a dangerous conversation
settle
to have.
Down, kid.
But your point is well taken in that the NFL is the biggest marathon race ever run. And you cannot get too high on wins, and you can't get too low on losses. And I think everybody understands this there.
Yeah.
And they know a lot happens before the season is totally fleshed out.
That's why it's so refreshing to see different logos in college football at the top.
Yeah.
It's so much, because then I go, yes, thank you. This is what we want.
I didn't know where you were going with this, but now that you've explained it, I appreciate that comment because you're right. It makes it so much better. It does.
When was the last time you saw Iowa at number two? You know, when was the last time you saw Cincinnati at number three?
Wait, Iowa? They got a team.
They got a team.
Oh, I didn't know they had a team.
I know. I didn't want to necessarily get into it, but let's get into Urban Meyer.
Urban?
No. What were you going to say? You're saying I got something.
No, I'll bring it up later.
Okay.
We can talk about it.
2-minute drill, maybe?
I'll put a pin in that.
Somewhere. I don't know what it was, but I'm going to put a pin in it.
I got it.
So Urban Meyer this weekend, I just wonder. People are talking about him saying, yeah, I want to get the 215, 250 on the offense for passing and rushing. And I think maybe he just misspoke. I don't know. I don't care about that. What I care most about is the fact that this guy is such a distraction. And now with the team at 0-5, how long until Urban Meyer gets fired, Scott? Because all that process gets expedited, doesn't it? It has to be. At some point, Urban Meyer this weekend, Tim Tebow started doing this whole, I talked to Coach this weekend, and I told him, you screwed up royally, man, and you need to repent, and you need to tell your wife, Miss Shelley, that she means the world to you. You need to reset that relationship again. And I went, this is not going to go well. This will not last long. Urban Meyer is not just a mess in Jacksonville. It's a giant, giant problem.
Yeah, what happens typically? Is coaches in these situations, they get years. Like they're going to get, 3-4 years to kind of flesh it out and figure it out. Then there are guys, you look at Chip Kelly in Philadelphia, and he was an unmitigated failure.
Yes.
I mean, you're scratching your head going, you're doing
what? What's he
what?
Even doing?
Why are you getting rid of, are you even... And I
How about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia, and he won a Super Bowl,
right?
And he's gone.
Right, but it's this with these guys that are these massive wholesale changes, and they really want control over everything, and that's what Urban Meyer really wants.
Yeah.
But in the NFL,
it doesn't work like that.
It's just a different animal, and I think people might even see that, and Urban may even see that now that he's into it, going, what have I gotten myself into? Massive mistake, and figuring out even for himself how to unwind. Maybe he subconsciously is sabotaging himself just so he can get out of the situation.
At some point, he might have to start thinking about it, because then you start losing all your players, right? I mean, half the time you don't have players when you're a rah-rah guy anyway. So getting them back,
Chuck
might
Knoll,
be a tough thing.
One of the greatest coaches of all time,
Pittsburgh Steelers, never
motivated any of his players. The players go, Chuck Knoll was about as exciting as a brilliant man. Actually, you hear about his life and who he was. Actually, a remarkable individual.
But that was probably part of his style, though.
He just said, I've got these players and they're professionals, and I put them in a position to win, and I that's it. That's all I do. I'm not here to get Terry Bradshaw excited to play football or get Mean Joe Green to be mean. That's what they do. And it's different because in college, and Urban Meyer goes, I got to fire up my guys. I got to get them, and it's not how it works.
Okay. There's that thing you're going to bring up. I don't know what it is. Do you remember what it is? Now you forgot.
I totally remember.
Oh, okay. You remember. So we're going to come back in the 2-minute drill. Scott's going to bring up that thing we put a pin in. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's not even amazing, but we'll see when we come back. More to go. Final segment next on KSL's Unrivaled. Stay with us.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled, Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
I want to bottle up that little dance you had going on there.
My little dance?
Bottle that up. Sell it. It's like...
Sell it on eBay?
Like when your mom goes, that's cool. And I go, oh, okay, Mom.
Okay. I'm just scratching my head at something.
Yeah.
I really need... I need an explanation for this.
This is the thing you wanted to bring
up. This is that thing.
Yes.
That thing we do.
I don't know what it is.
I do.
I'm excited.
Okay. I woke up this morning and I'm like, Ohio State is ranked higher than Oregon.
Arizona State is two spots, I think, ahead of BYU right now, too.
Okay.
Same thing, or maybe one.
So how in the world? Fine, whatever.
Same record.
Same.
I thought the same thing.
So how in the world is Ohio State ranked higher than Oregon when Oregon has beaten Ohio State?
They beat them.
They beat Ohio State.
And it's all about that. The timing of when did you lose?
But
it makes
zero
right
sense
in front of
to
them.
Me.
And it's like, hey, we're putting this list together. Yeah, they lost, but they lost, and they lost to them.
Right. And so Oregon is still kind of in the conversation, you know, with one loss. They still are with
sure.
College football playoff deal will come out, you know, not too distant future. And if Ohio State is ahead of Oregon in that, I have to scratch my head. I'm just sorry. I have to scratch my head.
But see, here's the rub, right? Because you have Ohio State who their loss is to a top 10 team, right?
Yeah.
And Ohio State's loss is to the Stanford team that has no idea who they are. You know, get their butt kicked over the weekend by three touchdowns. So
that's it?
I mean,
so you beat a better team, but you lost
honestly,
to a worse
like,
team?
Who'd you lose to?
Oh, so yeah.
When did you lose?
Better loss.
An amazing loss.
Look, a loss is a loss.
Our loss is amazing. Well, who'd you lose to? You guys. but it was an amazing loss. Thank you guys for that.
I don't know.
The loss that you gave us put us higher than you. Thank you so much.
So I woke up with this morning.
Yeah.
And you haven't helped.
It doesn't. No, I know.
No, it's.
I don't have any explanation for you.
It makes
no
sense.
And a bunch of old farts are going to roll up to a hotel room in Dallas or whatever and go, all right, let's put together this college football playoff. Who's got Ohio State number four? Who's with me? Like they're just gonna find some way to mess it up, man.
Well, why do you have them at four?
And right, they're I'm like,
well, but it's Ohio State, right? That's where they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be at four.
Yeah. Hey, when I was speaking of college football, I hated Texas A&M growing up. This is, again, going back to the whole thing of how important it is to not have the Death Star team as a dynasty in college football. I hated the Aggies growing up. If you're in Texas, you pick Texas or Texas A&M.
Right. You pick Texas.
We were a Longhorn family. I was born in Austin, man. I don't know anybody born in College Station. No such thing. Aggies? All the jokes.
But just start with the name. Texas is such a better name than Texas A&M.
A&M.
What is that? Yeah. Is that like a grocery chain? Is it like a, you know, A&M?
H-E-B down in Texas. Also Texas A&M. When I was a kid, I was like, what is A&M? And people would try to explain to me. I go, you didn't help.
Well, no, right.
Agriculture mechanical? What does that mean?
Is it mechanical or is it mining? Is it mechanical?
Didn't the guy on Pirates of Penzance sing about agriculture, rural, and mineral? And the show has hit a new low. I'm just saying that's how much I loved that. Like their fake ROTC that they have or the little core that they have down there?
Well, the 12th man and the guy that gets to actually be on the team and run down on the kickoff.
And I think that they've watered that down a little bit. It's not really the same as it used to. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So like,
guy was getting a lot of concussions.
He wears the number 12, though. Yeah, I think it's essentially like a walk-on now that they go, hey, man, we'll put you in the – we'll let you do it. It's like you have to kind of be aware of football. Anyway, here's the deal. On the 2-minute drill, I play this music, and Scott, you start to explain what the 2-minute drill is, and then we go from there. So let's do it.
Late in the football game, you got to go on the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you hurry your show the same way. Still got a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time. So talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy because everyone gets a trophy today, and we get two COVID shots and a whole different plethora of desserts.
Yeah,
yes,
can't eat them. It's time for pumpkin spice and apple crisp and all those things.
Yes.
I can't do any of the pumpkin spice stuff. I hate all that.
I like pumpkin spice, but not the pumpkin pie.
Yeah, pumpkin pie, but even pumpkin spice.
It's a texture thing with the pumpkin pie.
Oh, it's a mush for sure. Yeah. They're like, no, it's baked all the way through. You go, yeah, but it's mush. Yeah. And they go, yeah, it's done.
It's mushed pumpkin.
It's gross.
Could be like rotting.
It's like a, did you, by the way, in my neighborhood, it's like a race to see how many stupid pumpkins you can put on your front porch.
How many you got?
My kids are so mad because we have 9, which is a lot.
9?
Our neighbors have like 14, and our other 14. Neighbors have like 19.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
They're like, you got to have 17, and they got to be 4 per step. Let's get it going. And my kids are like, we're behind in the pumpkin race. I'm like, this is not a real race.
The great pumpkin race.
That's terrible. Scott. First thing up here, Ben Simmons looks like he might actually be coming back to play for the 76ers. That was my favorite tweet that I saw today, is that they're like, oh yeah, looks like he's actually going to be coming back. Now, they're looking to still trade him, but it doesn't look like there's going to be, there's an impasse right now, and he doesn't have anywhere to go, and it looks like he's actually going to be playing for the 76ers this year. That's like breaking up with your girlfriend, moving out, then moving back in because you didn't find another girlfriend in time, and both parties were like, oh, I guess this is all we got.
Yeah.
Which happens in relationships, Scott, but they're not the good relationships.
I think that's the hardest part about all this, is that Ben Simmons probably thought, somebody's out there. Someone likes me. Someone's going to be around, right?
I'm so good.
Yeah. And everyone goes, nah, you probably should stay where you are.
And the 76ers are going, hey, he's
he's actually a really good player. He's worth a lot. Yeah, I mean, he's like, well, he's amazing. Like,
how amazing is he? Well, I mean, we don't want him.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, not even close.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's worth a lot, like 17 draft picks. It's like, it got so ridiculous.
Some people, some organizations are really bad in their like, negotiation ploys. They're just not good at it. They're not good at their deception. They're not good at their covert operations.
Right.
You know, they're just kind of stupid.
Hey, speaking of covert operations that are stupid, the White Sox have accused the Astros of cheating, of stealing signs. I know it's a wild thing. Dusty Baker says,
that's a stretch right there.
Dusty Baker says, how dare you? The manager of the Astros, how dare you? Why would you even say something so mean? It's a waste of my time to talk about it, says Dusty Baker, as they respond to the allegations that they could be cheating. That's the beauty about the fact that you got caught cheating, is everyone can either make the real accusation about it, or they can bring it up and go, I don't know, they're probably cheating again.
Yeah.
It will always haunt you.
Once a cheater, always a cheater.
It will always come back to get you. And I found myself watching playoff baseball last night, one, because of the delay, and two, because, like, that little gap between the last game, the 405, or the last 205 game, and that Sunday night football game.
Yeah.
And
what
then
are you
because
do,
we had
right?
the delay, I was watching so much baseball last night. I saw the disaster of rules happen in the White Sox and the Red Sox.
Do you know how
Rays
they cheat
game.
Today? Someone actually cheat? Told me this over the weekend.
How do they cheat?
Because I brought the same thing up.
You said, oh, they're going to cheat.
Yeah.
Man.
You know how they cheat?
How is it?
They put a buzzer in their shoe.
This sounds fake.
No.
So, take your shoes off, kid.
So then it's like when, going to get the curveball, the buzzer is going to be, oh, here.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever
no,
heard.
No, it's the truth.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I know. We have the technology. That's the worst part. We have the technology.
Yeah.
And that's what we've chosen to do with
it. Someone who follows baseball, legitimate baseball person, actually told me this.
So millionaires are putting buzzers in their shoes to be able to earn
they're
more
chipping
millions
the players
dollars.
Is what they're doing. Just put a little chip in the back
wild.
Of their neck.
Then why can't we put, look, let's put buzzers in all the players' shoes. If it makes it more exciting, let's do it. I want to see it.
Why don't they just have,
juice them up, baby.
No, just flash a sign. Say, let everyone know.
This is a curveball. Try to hit it.
This is a curveball. Try to hit it. This is a fastball. Try to hit it.
In high school and football, I felt so confident about things. I'm like, we're running right here. And you still won't be able to stop it. That's why I used to love to do that kind of stuff. I wouldn't do it in certain games.
But
I wouldn't
no one would believe you, though.
I know. All right. Scott, did you have fun tonight?
Yeah,
I'm talking to Jared.
Is the show over?
Show's over, man.
Oh, wow.
Show's over.
I had a great time.
We'll be back again tomorrow. Another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. We'll see you then, everybody.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.